It was a pit bike, but he did hand me his Brackens and his GT, and I cleaned both those up, and he rode those on the track. But his pit bike, he handed me in pieces. He had the frame and fork re-chromed and the bars. He said, here's a box of decals, old school decals. I couldn't believe he had those. And he had tough wheels, everything. And he said, put it together. And I went, okay. And that bike did really well in the show. It won its class. It was that was a fun build for me. That bike was just so neat to look at. Every day I'd just stare at it like, what am I gonna do next?
BMX Breakthrough is bridging the gap from old school to new school, from tracks to manufacturers, from new riders to their local tracks, and it doesn't stop at racing, but the mission is to connect people with bikes. Join me, Jay Oakes, as I interview key people in the sport and in the industry that are involved in their local circles, in their communities, at their local tracks, and aiming to make a difference on a local level. You'll hear stories, marketing tips, failures, successes, and a way to make a difference in your local BMX community. Let's dive in as we kick off this next episode.
Yeah, Miranda always teases me. We get on Zoom calls. He'll get on and he'll go, hey, is Mark there? Okay, great. Got him on the screen and on his iPad and his phone. Always teases me about it.
We've got Mark everywhere.
Yes, they all do it. It's kind of amusing.
Well, Mark Darcy, it's exciting to be able to have a formal conversation with you to share with everybody else. But we've gotten the chance to hang out quite a bit at Frogtown and got to hang out a little bit at Dirty Fest last year, and that's coming up again. But I would love to have a chat with you because you do some really cool stuff. Not only do you have a background with bikes, but you have done some really cool things within the bike community, and you do some really cool, what I would call tinkering on some bikes as well. So that's pretty fun.
Yes, 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 I do.
I have not seen, I watch your photos, your posts on Facebook, and I watch these photos of your projects and these restorations that you do. And I have to say, like, you do a phenomenal job, and I love seeing the work that you do.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I work hard at it. I like doing it. It's kind of meditation to me. I get out in the garage, turn my music on, and do what I'm doing. And I just finished a 77 JMC for a friend, and he wanted me just to put it together for him with the old parts that were with it, clean them up, and I did. And he picked that up. He was pretty happy today. I didn't post any pictures of that. He's going to do all that and bring it out to the show. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that I appreciate about the detail that you put into bikes is that a lot of times, like if I clean something up, it depends on the level that I'm doing that. But if I clean something up, I think about like, oh, taking a rag around the bottom bracket and everything. Whereas the extent that you'll go to is you'll pull the cranks out, you'll pull the bottom bracket out, you'll bust out the chrome polish, all that, and you'll really get in all the cracks and crevices in order to detail that. So where, I'm curious, where does that attention to detail come from?
It's something I've always done. Back in the days of racing, I always cleaned my bike, and I always had this thought, if your bike's clean, you know your bike, you know what's not going to break, you know what's going to break, you know what it's going to be like. And it just made it kind of like it was a mental thing for me, made me faster. So I like to clean and polish. And I love, after every national, 2-day national, I'd clean my bike the night after the race and then before the next race. It's just something I did. It I don't know. I like doing it.
That's awesome. Is it therapeutic for you?
Very much so, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I would assume so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you've gone down, to the point of like pulling apart MX-1000.
MX-1000 900s, yeah. Yes.
Pulling apart the MX-1000 brakes and getting in and cleaning each and every one of the springs. And I think the thing that caught my eye was the attention to detail when you had restored some Shimano DX pedals for somebody. And
yes,
you had just done a top-down restoration just on a set of pedals, which was really cool.
Yeah, I like doing the pedals. I've done several sets of those. If they're not too chewed up on the ends, I can clean them up real nice. And then, you know, I have certain tools in my trade where I work, and they work perfect for that. So, yeah.
I'm That's able awesome.
To get angles on them and all that and get them up and then get them in for powder coating. They're originally painted. I thought they were anodized back in the day, but they're actually painted. So I just get them painted again.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Man, didn't know that, huh?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Huh.
It's crazy.
The more, but... you know. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So speaking of detail on bikes and the things that they look like, you have recently been working on a project that has stemmed from bike shows. So will you talk a little bit about your, let's talk about the shows and then we'll move into the recent launch.
Sure. I got back into bikes. I got out of it after 2002 and then got back into it, pulled my old Basset out of a little museum in a bike shop in 2010 or 11. And I just said I was going to clean it up and put it in a bike show just to have some fun. I kept seeing this bike show online, and it was in San Diego. Troy Dunsmore had put it on, you know, was going to put it on. It was his first. And I went crazy on that bike. I detailed it. I had bars re-chromed. I had the frame fork re-chromed. I, you know, cleaned up the hoops, everything, had everything done up real nice. And I polished every piece of metal on that bike. And I put it in the show, and it was kind of crazy. You know, they went through all the trophies. And I looked at my wife and I said, well, I didn't do so well this time, but that's okay. There's another show. And then they called best of show and I won best of show. And I remember her turning and looking at me and said, you won the whole show, baby. And I was like, dang, instantly hooked, you know, instantly hooked. So I started going to shows. My second show didn't place. And I was like, hey, cool. I got to see some good bikes, some great friends. And I started going to show after show after show, and that led into 10 years of bike shows, and which led into what I'm doing today.
That's really cool. Yeah. So what is the environment of a show? Like, so I've been to a couple of them, but, you know, I would assume that not everybody listening will have had the experience of having gone to a show. So will you explain, like, what is the excitement, the draw, the joy, the fun that stems from that?
Well, I'd be glad to. There's so many classes, 20-inch classes, your 70s, your 80s, your 90s, your 2000 and up classes, your cruiser class, your 24 inches came out in the 80s, you know, so 80s, 90s, and 2000 and up. Your 26-inch cruiser class, which was the start of the cruiser revolution, you know, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s and up. And then there's custom cruisers. Some of these guys they're doing 14 karat gold bikes. It's insane what they're doing to them. They're engraving in the frames, the forks, the stems, the bars, and they're making them really nice showpieces. There's stretch bikes, there's pit bikes, and all these guys, they clean them up, polish them up real nice, and try to get them as close to error correct as possible. And they go up against other guys, and it's just, you get to see the 80s, you know, you get to see the 70s, you get to see, you know, the 90s if you're a 90s guy, you know, 2000 up guy. And it's super exciting to see all the bikes. I mean, the 70s bikes, there's a couple guys out there that just unbelievable what they have. And you look at these bikes and it's like, I used to have that when I was a kid, you know. We've gone to Anaheim and we did small bike shows at Anaheim during the Supercross. And you got 60,000 people looking at your bikes. And everyone that walks up are like, I used to have that, you know. And they start talking about it. And we start talking about going to shows. It's just the camaraderie, the people you see out there, the same people always, your friends. It's a lot of fun. I have a good time. Whether I win or lose, I have the greatest time in the world because I get to see some cool bikes and talk to some cool friends, you know.
That's really fun. And and I would agree with that. I think that going there, I think one of the values of it from my perspective, because the first, I don't know if it was the first show, but one of the first shows that I went to was in 22 on June 4th, the BMX Society show,
Oh,
right
yeah.
before they gave Bob Osborne the Lifetime
Osborne,
Achievement Award. Were you at that
yes.
show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I figured as much. We didn't know each other then, but walking around and seeing these bikes and being able to kind of walk through definitely walk through the eras of bikes and the generations and see some of the stories. Not necessarily, I mean, some of them weren't, people weren't standing with them the whole time. So it's not like they were just standing there and reminiscing and sharing stories. And one of the things that I found was that there are a lot of people that don't, that have these bikes that don't necessarily have a story attached to them.
Yes.
which I've got to be honest, I think one of the most heartbreaking moments at that show was toward the end when they went through and they gave away the awards, and there were a couple of big awards that were given out, and you'd probably recall exactly what they were and which bikes they were, but these people came up and they gave them the awards, and they would say, "All right, well, like, tell us the story about this bike." And one guy's like, "Oh, I didn't know what it was. I had a neighbor that was getting rid of it. And I thought, oh, well, I guess I'll fix that up." And then somebody said, "Take it to a show." And here we are. Now I won first place.
Yeah.
And it just, and it was so saddening to me because in my mind, like, the value is attached to the story that goes along with it as well. And granted, they were beautiful bikes. I don't want to take anything away from that, but at the same time, like, I love hearing the stories of I was that at that show, and my dad got us a spot, and I thought it was I asked him, I said, "Why? Like, our bikes aren't that pretty." But like, I was sitting there with a 99 GT Speed Series that was owned and raced by my childhood hero and mentor, and he let me buy the bike off of him when he moved to Hawaii a couple of years ago. So, like, that to me, like, that's a cool story.
Listen, that's a great story. That is, I love to hear those stories. And like you said, those guys that walk up and go, "Oh, I just picked it up at a garage sale and, that I'd put it together." I'm like, "Okay, well, there you go. I'm glad you're collecting. I'm glad you're here. But, I want to hear a story. I want to hear, this was my race bike and, it's raced a million times." A lot of guys have called my bike a carpet queen, my 24-inch Basset. It is pretty, yes, but it's raced 1,000 times, and now it's pretty. Now I show it. It's not a carpet queen. It's my bike. It's something I love,
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, that show was a lot of fun. That was I had a good time there.
It was. I actually a question on that. When I was at that show, one of the things that I thought or that I noticed was that there wasn't a whole lot of mid school represented. And I don't know if you have thoughts on that, but I felt like there wasn't a whole lot of mid school and then even new school. I don't know if you've started introducing that into the show space yet, but do you have thoughts on why that mid school isn't quite as prominent just yet?
There are actually a few guys within the last couple of years that have been bringing up the mid school stuff. You're talking 90s, 2000s, early 2000s. Yes.
Yeah.
There's a guy in Las Vegas. He'll be out at Dirty Fest again. And he had, I think, 12 of his 40 bikes out there, and they're all mid school.
Oh,
There's
wow.
Joey Madden. He brings his mid school stuff out because he's in love with mid school. That's his era. I see a lot of mid school and 2015 and up bikes. They're starting to really take presence at all the shows in the last couple of years.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, and that's fair, 'cause since then I've gotten to go to Dirty Fest and gotten to go to Frogtown, and George is definitely, he brings out the trailer loaded with his GT collection, which is always super cool.
He'll be at best.
And yeah,
Yeah, we
that's
got a
always a
space for
fun.
him
It's like he's
and
got his own museum, rolling museum that he brings with him.
George is coming out there with the GT trailer at Dirty Fest. We actually I made room for him to be in the bike show area.
Oh, right on. That'll be cool.
Yeah, Mike asked me if I could do that, and I said, yeah, let me look at the paper. Yep, I got enough room for him. So, yeah,
we're perfect. Well, so speaking of bike shows, you have been working on a project that you recently released. And so will you give us a little bit of insight, open up the curtains on what you've been working on?
Sure. So it all started about a year ago, maybe. Dino Bartoli, he used to race for BDC. He was super fast back in the day on cruisers. He was probably one of my biggest competitions. And Dino and I have been doing bike shows for a long time. We've, you know, we've judged a lot of shows. We've promoted shows with Craig Turner. And he just one day says, you should start an association. And I went, yeah, okay. You know, and yeah, I really don't have time for that. And ending of last year, it was like, hey, this could be a reality. So we started to put something together. We grabbed four guys and made them board members. Dino, myself, Billy Zerzow, and Barry Nelson. And we all got together and, hey, we came up with a name, ABSA Pro, American Bike Show Association. And we started building the website and started doing all kinds of stuff, talking about memberships and rules and regulations and, you know, judging critiques and doing shows in different places. And I was like, this is going to be impossible to do, but it's not. It's all finally coming together. We know we have our first show next week. And then, of course, Dirty Fest and Frogtown. I'm looking at possibly 10 shows this year, which will be really nice. It's an association. The reason we're doing it is we're trying to unite everybody on the same page. We're trying to get all the bike shows doing the same thing. I've been watching it for 10 years, and everybody at every bike show is completely different. There's different styles of judging, different types of classes, different this, different that. And a lot of people get a little upset about it. You know, they're like, well, this last bike show had this class. Now they're combining all the cruisers in one class instead of separating them, or combining all the 20 inchers in one class. And that's okay. That's the way the promoter wants to do it. That's okay. You know, I'm trying to get, well, I should say we're trying to get all of this, for lack of better words, we want to make everything the same. We want to try to have everybody do the same thing at all the shows to make it fair. I've seen shows where they have the contestants judge, or they have the crowd judge, or they'll send out one judge to look at all the bikes. And it's kind of hard. And if you've got a million of your friends there, of course they're going to vote for your bike. You know, and so they're going to load the ballot box. If you do it with contestants that are in the show, they're going to do the same. You know, my bro's in this class, he's going to vote for me, I'll vote for him, and everybody starts doing that. If we have judges in the continuity of doing the same thing over and over again, it's a fair show. It's been proven. We've done it several times already, and it's, you know, the GT Triple Crown series, Craig Turner, myself, and a few others put those three shows on, and we had judges for every class. And their word was their word. And they're all guys that have been around sport forever. Guys that have raced, guys that are pros, guys that are on the Hall of Fame, you know, guys that know bikes. And I just think it would be great to get an association. And that's why we started it. In the beginning, I didn't think it would be possible, but now it's very possible.
That's fun. Well, yeah, so you mentioned the show next week, which this episode will have come out after that, but the first show that you're going to is called Whiskey Row out in Phoenix.
Yeah, okay, in Prescott.
Okay, in Prescott. Okay, so that's the one that Mike Miranda's putting on.
Correct. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Mike is one of our board members as well. He's been there holding my hand with the computer stuff. You know, I made him a board member help.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You know, getting the board together, trying to find the right people for this, it wasn't hard. A lot of guys that I know our past racers. My wife is even on the board. I couldn't have done half of this without her. I'm telling you right now, you know, all the legal stuff, our license, our state and feds, PIN numbers. She knows it all. She's got a little book over here with everything in it, you know, and she's on top of it. And it probably wouldn't have been possible without her help. So I got to give her kudos on that. You know, and she knows BMX. She actually raced her first race 2 years ago and got second. I was pretty happy for her. Yeah. Yeah. She barely made it up the last tabletop over the top of it, but she did it. I was so proud of her. You know, that was her first last race.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. So you said first and last race. What was it that made her finally want to jump out on the track then?
I convinced her.
Okay.
she's listened to BMX every single day for the last 12 and a half, 13 years. You know, every single day I talk about bikes. She's seen it. She sees the pictures. She sees the trophies. She sees the bike. She's heard it all. And, you know, we've gone out to racetracks and watched races. You know, I sponsored a couple girls the last couple of years. And, you know, this last year I haven't sponsored anybody. But, you know, I still stay in touch with that because BMX is BMX. I like to see it grow again. I mean, if you were around in the 80s, you saw how BMX was huge in the beginning of the 80s, how it just exploded. And I race in Orange 3 times a week. And then, you know, on Sundays, you could hit La Mirada, go to Zeus and come back to Orange and race 3 times in one day. You know, it was huge back then. And then it kind of died off a little bit. And I'd love to see it get back the way it was. USA BMX is doing a phenomenal job at getting it back together. You know, the one thing I do like is Todd's brainchild of doing a downhill track old school style. You know, that, and then Mike coming out and doing it, and then Texas doing it, you know, it's really neat. It brings back the joy. And what I think is really neat about that is when you incorporate a bike show into the old school racing, now you got two of the best of both worlds right there. You know, all the old guys are coming out, they're getting back on a bike, they're riding, they're bringing their kids out, such as yourself, turning everything around and bringing it back, you know, and it's just so neat to see. I look forward to the weekends when I can watch the Nationals on my iPad. You know, some days I do, some days I don't, but most of the time I do because I miss it. And of course, when I'm watching them on the gate, when that gate drops, I snap with it. It's just, it's habit.
It's that muscle memory.
It is. It really is. I think that getting back to what we were talking about with the association, I think getting an association together is something that's been needed for a while. And I've had a lot of people tell me that. And a lot of people didn't want to take it on. And I know why now. It's a lot of work. But it's the first one. So hopefully I can make this go really well. I mean, it has been so far. We've gotten a lot of good feedback. So, yeah.
Well, that's great. I'm excited for you. I'm excited to see how it changes things, or you know how you know, maybe it moderates slash mediates some of the conversation amidst, because like you said, I have heard the frustrations and the rumblings and the mutterings of, well, this was different than the other one, and ultimately, you know, at the end of the day, somebody goes home kind of frustrated, and so, you know, what you're talking about I think is great. I think the value of a show, I enjoyed going out to it. Like I said, being able to see the older bikes, being able to see the different generations and eras of bikes. And I think that there's something so valuable about that for kids to be able to see where BMX came from. And all the people that I've tried to encourage to get to the old school races, is what I say is, how many sports do you know of that you can meet the founding pro riders of that sport, you know, or founding pros. You know, you're not going to meet the person that started football. You're not going to meet the people that started baseball.
Nope. So, but you see the pros out at the track, and they're going to come up and shake your hand and sign whatever you want signed. You know, that's the best part.
Yeah, Yeah. And then knowing where bikes came from and the evolution of the geometry and such, like I just finished, I believe it's a 1980. That's the closest that I can understand based on serial number and graphics, but a 1980 Redline MX2.
Oh, nice.
And my father-in-law actually found it at a garage sale for $20. And it was amazing. And it's got it had the original or what I understand to be the original Sugino cranks and the MX-1000 front and rear brakes, and it had the original Redline fork, the Diamondback bars that were like the knockoff CW bars.
Sure.
Anyway, so I got this bike. It also came with some Z rims and the original ACS hubs.
Wow.
And so I pulled those off. I put some Skyway Tufts on it because I didn't feel comfortable racing the Z rims.
Yeah, right.
But
like that scared me too.
Yeah. Well, and when I was talking to my dad about it, he goes, I don't know that I remember a lot of people racing those when they were new. So I don't know that I'd push too hard on them.
Yeah.
So we did that. But I guess that whole story to say, understanding where bikes came from, and I get on that bike and it feels like a circus bike to me. Like it, because comparatively the top tube is 3 inches shorter than my modern top tube, and your stem is a third of the length. And so it is so small, and you don't understand, like, I mean, 3 inches is a ton on the geometry of a bike.
Sure.
So yeah, just the way that it rides and being able to feel that is just kind of wild.
Yeah, we always joke around and say you look like a circus bear on your bike, you know, because back in the day, they were perfect for us, but now we're old and big. And, yeah. Yeah, well, I think the old bikes like that are great to keep in the history and for kids to come out to the shows and see that and see how BMX evolved into what it is today. Is, I think it's kind of important if you're into BMX, you know, you see where it started and what it's done. I have a 1977 monoshock in the garage right now, and it's Stu Thompson's. He wanted me to clean it up and you know, lube it up and bring it out to Dirty Fest for him. I'm like, yeah, I'll do that any day of the week, you know.
That's exciting.
It weighs 48 pounds. It's just a beast. But I get on that thing and I ride it, I'm like, dang, this thing, how do we do this back in the day, you know, compared
that's
to what
impressive
bikes today. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Push that thing around, sure.
Well, when you did the same thing in preparation for Frogtown with Jeremy McGrath's bike.
Yes.
You cleaned that thing up, and which I think he showed that bike. I don't think he actually ended up riding it at Dirty Fest at Frogtown.
It was a pit bike, but he did hand me his Brackings and his GT, and I cleaned both those up, and he rode those on the track. But his pit bike, he handed me in pieces. He had the frame and fork re-chromed and the bars. He said, here's a box of decals, old school decals. I couldn't believe he had those. And he had tough wheels, everything. And he said, put it together. And I went, okay. And that bike did really well in the show. It won its class. It was that was a fun build for me. That bike was just so neat to look at. Every day I'd just stare at it like, what am I going to do next? You know, it was, yeah.
I get that. I mean, it was fun. It was just fun chatting with him about the history of the bikes that he had brought with him. I think I spent, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes talking with him and Lopes and kind of chatting about what they had brought with them and their history in the sport, because some of them being involved in the sport was prior to me being there. And so anyway, it was really cool chatting with him, seeing that bike. I knew that you had restored it for him just because of your Facebook post, and so then getting to see it up close and personal and seeing the great lengths that you went to make sure that that thing was in top level condition.
Yes. Yeah, he has four other VDCs he wants me to work with, and he's been real busy, so we haven't been communicating in the last couple months, but I got four more I want you to build. And I'm like, okay, whenever you're ready, let me know.
That's pretty exciting.
It is. It really is.
Well, I mean, he's Oh, sorry. What was that?
I said, he's such a down to earth guy. He's so easy to talk to, and you know, his whole roots is BMX. So you know, he gets it.
He is. Yeah. I showed up, went over to him when him and Brian had pulled into Frogtown and ran over just to check. And I was like, hey, is there anything that I can get you? And like, so chill, so easygoing. And I was like, all right, yeah, I'll try to go find you guys a table. And I went around looking, and he's like, no rush. If you got other things going on, don't worry about it. I'm not the priority here. And I'm like, no, it's okay. Like, want to help you out, want to take care of you, but we appreciate you coming out. But anyway, he wasn't in a hurry.
Yeah. 7-time world champion, never went to his head.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's just amazing, amazing individual.
Now's the time in the episode where I get to give a special shout out and thank you to our financial sponsors that are backing the BMX Breakthrough mission. Our goal is to be a bridge to help you invest in the next generation of BMX athletes and grow ridership at a local level. To our gold sponsors, to Luminex Neon and Marketing Breakthrough. To our silver sponsors, Sound Cedar Lumber and Bicycle Thieves. And our bronze sponsors, ProStar Gates and Justin Shepherd Title. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for backing the BMX Breakthrough mission. If you have more questions, would like to learn more about sponsorship or getting involved in the mission, feel free to reach out to us at j@bmxbreakthrough.com or visit our website, www.bmxbreakthrough.com. Now, let's jump back into this episode.
Speaking of the, you know, him starting out in BMX, Brian starting out in BMX, you referenced BMX. So I want to know a little bit more of what is your background in BMX? Because now you focus a lot on the show stuff. So I want to know about your childhood growing up racing.
My childhood was crazy. I would say 70s. My first race was in 77, I believe. Prior to that, I was buying strokers, mowing lawns and buying strokers because I kept breaking them. I was jumping off roofs into pools. You know, I was a crazy little kid. I got in a lot of trouble on my bike because I did things that normal kids didn't do. And, you know, I had a few, I had a Dangurney at one time. I had a Centurion at one time. I really liked the strokers. I really thought those were great. And around 77, one of my friends, his brother's name or his cousin's name was Brian Lewis. I don't know if you know who Brian Lewis is.
I don't think so.
He's old school, 70s, rode for Bassett and a few others, two-wheeler, stroker. He said, hey, my cousin races. He's going to go over and see his trophies. And I'm like, yeah, because I was like the kid who always jumping my bike and motoing it out, putting mud flaps on it, getting the big knobby tires, you know, and buying the V bars or whatever the bars were, the big motocross bars. And, I went over to his house and I looked at his trophies. And I thought, wow, this is really super cool. And he says, you want to come out to the track? And I said, yeah. So I went out to, I believe it was, Western Sportsorama. I think that was the track. And I saw, and I was just in total amazement. I went out and raced the following week and I won my first race in beginner and I was just instantly hooked. By 79, I was racing everywhere. I helped build Orange in 77 and raced the first race there. And they started racing Wednesday, Fridays, and Sundays by 79, 1980, 81. And then we were hitting Azusa, La Mirada, Irvine. There were so many tracks around here. There were three over by Long Beach, you know. If you were quick enough, you could go to La Mirada in the morning or Irvine in the morning, head up to Azusa for the afternoon race, and then Orange at night on a Sunday. And we used to do that. It was kind of fun and crazy, but we did it. And 1980, tripled at Orange, I think, two times in a row. And I was approached by Steve Rink, and he asked me if I wanted to race for him, because I was actually racing a 26-inch Powerlite cruiser. I raced the Grand Nationals, and it 1980 was the first Grand Nationals they actually had a cruiser class, and it was all ages. There was no age group. It was just got a million guys trying to race it. And I actually got a picture of it. I was actually leading it, ended up fourth, but I was leading it the first straightaway. And I've got Cosmala, Kramer, Tim Littlethorpe later on became one of my teammates on Powerlite. You know, Joe Claveau, he actually had a 24-inch in that race. And Jeff Cosmala, there was a few big ones in there. And I held my ground. But Steve Rink approached me and said, "Hey, I want you to race for me." He gave me a 20-inch. I kept racing that cruiser, and then he brought out 1980, a little late, maybe. He brought me out the 24-inch that he just made. RRS had the first 24-inch, and Steve Rink had the second. And he handed me this raw frame and fork and some wheels and said, "Put it together." So I did, and raced it at Prado the following day, and I was all over the map on that thing. It was like racing that kind of a 20-inch kind of a cruiser. I couldn't figure it out. I ended up getting pretty fast on that bike, and I spent a year with him. And then, excuse me, later on down the road, Bassett approached me and said they just built a new one, and you know, like to see you race it. And so I kind of went over to Bassett, and their 24-inch was amazing. 24-inch front end with a 20-inch rear end, and oh yeah, it was so fast. Real responsive in the turns. It's a fast cruiser, and I just got faster and faster. I ran the biggest Ashtabula cranks you can run, because I like really long cranks. And I ran Ashtabula because I was torquing so hard I'd twist everything else. And wow, I got National 2 on that bike. Started off National 10 with Powerlite, then went National 2, National 4, 6, 7. All over the map on that. District ones, regional ones, state ones. World Cup, number two twice. Couldn't get that world one, but, you know, that was kind of fun. Yeah. I went through my storage today with Miranda, and he was just pulling out my trophies and laughing at him, going, "Dude, do you know how old this is?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "This one says NBA, and it's 77. Look at this." It was something really off the wall. I think it's Santa Ana Elks Club or something. But racing was really, really something I excelled in very, very quickly. Sometimes I didn't take it serious because I was just having fun, you know, and a lot of guys were real serious in my class, and I was kind of like, "Loosen up, we're having fun, you know, win or lose, let's have a good time." And yeah, that's just the way I was. You know, I raced for Bassett from then on, and then I went to ProCraft and couldn't really ride their bike. And a lot of pictures you see in the magazines of me with ProCraft, I'm actually on my Bassett frame. I just put ProCraft stickers on because it was super hard. Yeah, it was super hard to ride. Yes. Huh. You know, in late 80s, I gave it up for a little bit and focused on work, and was doing underground fiber optics. And about 91, 92, I got back into it, and I started racing NBL. And I liked NBL. Went back east. They had 10-man gates. I liked that. That was super neat. You know, asphalt turns. And did really well in the NBL, same thing with the number plates, got some really good numbers, and raced NBL and ABA for a while there. And then towards 96, I was out in Florida for two races, two nationals with a friend of mine in Tampa, Florida, and can't remember what the other one was, Orlando, and came back, and about 6 months later, new boots at work, and a little blister on my toe, and got infected. And of course, I took time off work and got it cleaned up, and doctor said 2 weeks. I took 2 weeks off. Everything was healed up. Everything was fine. Went back to work and couldn't walk 2 days later because the pain was just unbearable. It just the worst. It didn't look bad. It looked a little purple to me, but you know, I thought maybe it was bruised or something. And I went into the hospital and they said, "Oh no, you got a little bit of gangrene in your bone there. We're going to have to amputate part of your toe." And I was like, "Oh, okay." Well, from 96 through 97, I spent a year in the hospital. And in that year span, they did a total of 30 surgeries on me. And they chopped and chopped and took off pieces and replaced arteries and veins. And they didn't know what it was. They didn't know if it was PBD, if it was Berger's disease, if it was diabetes. They couldn't figure it out. And it just kept getting worse and worse. And later in 97, the doctor came in. He said, I'll never forget it. He goes, "Mark, we're going to nip it at the bud. We're going to cut it off just below the knee." And I thought to myself, well, why couldn't you do that a year ago? You know? And, you know, I was pretty down on myself at the time. And they cut it off. And I didn't look at my leg for a day. And then when I finally looked at it, I hopped into a wheelchair and wheeled myself out of the hospital. You know, I just wanted to go home. I was tired of the getting poked and prodded with needles, drugs, and pain and this and that. And I just didn't want any more of it. And I went home and ended up, I was married at the time, divorcing because of it. Lost my job at the time, my racing career. And I didn't think I was a man anymore. So I, you know, the best way to shut the head off is a little bit of alcohol. Well, a little bit of alcohol turned into a lot of alcohol. And to the point where I was drinking myself. I don't think I was sober for 4 years. And that's how I dealt with it. And I had a good friend finally tell me, "Hey, dude, your leg's gone. It's not coming back. You're going to have to deal with it." And, you know, that was probably the best thing I ever heard. I ended up, I stopped drinking, got sober, attended a few AA meetings, which is probably the best thing in the world for me. And, went back to school. It was suggested I go back to school, get a career, do all this good stuff. And that's exactly what I did. I ended up with 4 degrees in history, a minor in psychology and health science degree, and ended up, I wanted to teach history, but I ended up going into prosthetics and found a passion for that. We get to build stuff with my hands, cool stuff. You know, and I've been doing that ever since, and got back into the bicycles. 2002, I thought I could try to race, and it didn't work out well for me. I ended up 9 in the state series, and I was happy with that, and I'm done until 2012, when I, or 2014. I have to look sometimes. 2014, my first trophy's on the wall.
Okay.
2014, I got back in, and then that's when I, you know, started playing around again and, you know, doing bike shows and heading back out to the track just to check it out, you know.
Wow.
Here today. Yeah, that's my story in a nutshell.
That's wild. Well, so first clarification. So that all happened after the polar bear incident, right?
Yeah. I remember telling you that. You know, it's funny. I teach orthotics and prosthetics at the college, and we have the number one school for orthotics and prosthetics. The instructors there are phenomenal. I'm not talking about myself, but the ones I work with. So whenever I get the new class, and, you know, just like the other day, they didn't even know I was, you know, had a prosthetic leg. The new students, we have new master students come in first years, and they ask me what happened, and I give them the polar bear story. And they just sit and stare at me, and then I just walk away. You know, kind of a smile on my face. And, you know, some of them bite into it, and some of them will kind of look at me like, is he serious? I'm going to hear shark attack next, or, you know. Yeah. The polar bear one's my favorite.
Yeah, no, I think that was great. And, you know, and the reality is that you don't question if somebody's telling you a story about how they lost their leg, you don't actually sit there and question them. You're gonna believe, you're gonna take it at face value. And so one of my friends has a glass eye, and when he tells a story, and he's got a couple of stories that he'll rotate through of how he lost it, and one of the things that he said, because then when he goes through and he, when you finally find out the real reason, is he just talks about there was a tumor on his eye when he was, I don't know, like 2 years old or something, and so they removed it. And then everybody gets really, really somber and really serious. And he goes, it's always interesting to me that when I tell the story and I tell this graphic story about, you know, the way that it actually, or the way that this made up way that I lost my eye, and everybody laughs and stuff. But then when I tell them that I went in and a doctor took it out surgically, then everyone's like, oh, that's serious. And he goes, it's always interesting to me because when it's done correctly, everyone's really right? somber. But if it happened accidentally, then people are like, oh, that's so funny. So, yeah. No, we were at Frogtown. We were up on the gate, and I'd asked you about your leg, and you had told me that. And I, same thing. I just didn't know exactly how to respond. And then you told me, you know, the real way. And I was like, oh, okay. But you know, you just don't know how to react, how to respond.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I get the response when I tell the truth, they kind of go, oh, well, that kind of sucks. And I'm like, yeah, that's why I use the other story, because it sounds much better. All right. Most of the time I get, yeah, I like the other story better.
Yeah. I don't know that it would be. I think you probably experienced a whole lot less discomfort than if a polar bear would have gotten it, and then you had to get trucked down a mountain.
I was blessed in a lot of ways. You know, this happening to me probably grounded me better, made me a better person, and then meeting my wife and her son made me a huge better person. You know, Wow. Yeah. I'm just so much better now than I was before. And cool. I think God has a plan for me, and this is his plan, and I'm good with it. You know, I'm happy.
That's
I like
great.
Where I'm at.
Love that.
Yeah. I got better.
So what was it like, obviously not having your leg, your God-given leg to ride your bike like you were used to? What was the process and experience like in getting back on your bike and being able to ride again?
It was a lot. It was a lot. You know, bunny hopping, you pull up on your pedals with your feet. Can only do that with one foot. The biggest thing is, it's called proprioception. And that's time and space where your hand goes, you know, I can reach over here, look at you, grab a bottle, because I know where my hand is, right? With my foot, you know where your feet are going. You always know where in time and space your foot is. I don't have that anymore. So kicking things, stepping on cats, you know, things like that are everyday norms for me, you know, kicking the wall, you know, tripping on curbs because you don't know where your foot is. And when I had it, the first time I raced, I got on my bike and I thought, okay, two pedals start. Well, of course I fell over, you know, I clipped in because I wanted to keep this foot on the pedal. Big mistake. I'd never clipped it in my life and just messed my mind up. Yeah. Fell over on the gate. And of course, everybody's like, oh, you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. Leave me alone. Get back up on the gate. And one pedal started. And when I came out of the gate, I pushed down with my right, brought my left up, pushed down on my left foot that's not there. And when I came down, my heel actually turned in, hit the crank arm, popped me off of it. Down I went again, you know? And that was a challenge, trying to figure out how to keep my foot on the pedal. I recently figured out a system, and with a little help from none other than Stu, you know, he watched me race in Texas, and he says, you know, I noticed when you race, you're constantly looking down at your foot, and you're picking it up and putting it back on the pedal. I said, that's because I don't know where it is. And what I do now is, when you adjust somebody's feet, you adjust them outward 5 to 7 degrees, because everybody, that's how people stand. It's for balance. The human anatomy, you'll stand, if you look down at your feet are outward, you know, like that. I actually turned my foot in, my prosthetic foot. So when I put it on the pedal and I pedal down, it stays straight now instead of turning in and kicking in on me. And Stu said, remember those things back in the day? They're little straps that went from the inside of your pedal out to the outside of your pedal. You stick your foot in and you turn it and it tightens down. And I go, I do. I found those. And I've since put those on my pedal and it helps me pedal. It took a lot of adjustment, a lot of trying to figure out things, turning my foot in. I'm having a prosthetic made right now for racing. One of my students, just amazing kid. He made a check socket for me. When I put it on, I looked at him, I just stared at him and went, dang, dude, it is the best fitting thing I've ever had. I've been in the same prosthetic socket for over 12 years now, and you're supposed to change them out every 2 years. I'm a creature of habit. I can't find the right one. Well, this kid just made me one. So I'm gonna have a race leg. I got my race foot. I have, you know, the way to hold my foot in. And listening to Stu tell me what I was doing really helped me a lot too, you know, because when he tells you something, you listen. So yeah. It took a little bit of getting used to, a lot of getting used to, and the confidence level I have now when I'm racing, like Frogtown last year, out of that first turn, that tabletop jump, I was clearing that. And every time I jumped it in practice, I was like, oh my God, I'm 18 again. And I rush back up to the hill and do it again. Everybody's like, dude, you're going to wear yourself out. I don't care. I'm jumping. It's fun. I can jump again.
That's, you know, really
it's
cool.
It's, yeah, the confidence level is getting better again. And am I going to race at Dirty Fest? Probably not, because I'll be running that bike show out there, you know, and that's real important to me. I want to make sure everything runs perfect. I will bring my bike out and take some laps. Absolutely. That's, you know, I'm not going to hesitate to do that.
That's cool. Well, I think that's inspiring for, you know, other people, is that there are a lot of stories of people that have had similar experiences. And, you know, there's the first one that comes to mind is Bethany Hamilton, the surfer, and surfing, learning to surf with one arm. And I would assume that process is, you said it was a lot, and I would assume there's a lot of frustration that goes into that, but you're at some point, I would hope that your story can impact somebody else that has a similar experience and being able to go, okay, Mark was able to get over it. He was able to ride and get through, and I can do that too.
I know of a girl up north that races, and she's missing her arm. She's a wrist disarticulation, I believe, or transradial. I'm not sure, but she races with a prosthetic hand. I remember at the World Championships in 95, somebody said, hey, check out the guy on the track. And I watched him go by, and he was an above-knee amputee all the way up to his hip, and he had one foot clipped into the pedal, and he was just going up and down with it as fast as he could. And I was absolutely blown away. I mean, people are laughing at him. I'm like, why is that funny? That's awesome. You know, and I thought back then, wow. And I've seen other guys out there. I have a friend that lives in Utah, and he does a lot of dirt jumping. He's got a prosthetic leg, and we've kept in contact over the years, and I've sent him feet and, you know, product that he's needed to go out and jump, and he beats stuff up. I kind of like him, you know, he's not afraid. And then I know a couple other mountain bike riders that live in Utah that, you know, have prosthetic legs, and they don't stop either. I'm not the only one out there, but I'll tell you what, it's fun. It's still fun to me. I'm 60 years old and I still want to race like an 18-year-old. You know, I want to get out there. I was asked by a friend of mine, he said, hey, I'm going to bring a hack out to Dirty Fest. You want to race it with me? And I was like, yeah. My wife's like, no. Remember you're saying no.
those side hacks, you guys are incredible, because side hacks scare me. Like, I can do a lot of things on a bike, and I've seen a couple of those crashes, and I don't, maybe it's just me getting a little bit older, but I see those guys go down on side hacks and I go, yeah, not interested.
I raced side hacks once in my life, and I was at La Mirada, and I crashed and cracked my pelvis, and that was it for me.
Wow.
The pioneers of the side hacks. I mean, look at Dennis Dane. Wow. You know, I can't think of his name. Oh God. He brings out so many beautiful bikes too. He used to race with Dennis. And then you got the Crowfoot brothers, right?
Okay.
Those two guys broke his back the second year at Dirty Fest.
Frogtown. Yeah.
Yeah. Frogtown. Yeah. And was back out there the next day with a back brace on. I'm like, dude.
Yeah, that was the crash that I was actually referring to. Is that's the one that I identify as like, nope, I'm not interested in racing a side hack. That looks gnarly.
They're fun. Craig Turner helped me out a few years back, and we built a side hack. I don't know if you've ever seen pictures of it, a 26 inch side hack, and we made it big enough so I could put my son's wheelchair in it, take him for a ride. And this kid, oh my god. It's just like he wants me to go. And it's like, okay, you and your wheelchair is 80 pounds. This side hack with this frame is about another 80 pounds. And, you know, I got a couple hundred pounds on me. This is getting, you know, Irvine heat. I'm good. We're going to go home. But, you know, we built that for him. And it's kind of a neat side hack that, you know, he's since outgrown. He's gotten bigger wheelchairs because he's gotten bigger and it won't fit in there, unfortunately. So, you know, Craig and I have talked about building another side hack so I can take him.
So in that particular setting, pushing 160 pounds of you know the him in the wheelchair and then the side hack, does that become more difficult with the prosthetic as well? Do you have to learn how to move that?
No, I get 3-speed on it, real easy gears. So okay. You know, once I get it going, I can get pedaling it, and it gets going pretty good. You know, I sit down most of the time when I ride, but as of lately, I've been standing up and jumping curbs and, you know, being a kid again.
Being 18 again, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I got to be careful because sometimes I hear that chain pop, that popping sound when it comes off the, you know, getting ready to come off the sprocket. And I was like, whoa, you're 60, dude. You're not going to recover quickly. Yeah. Yeah, my wife's put a stop to that. It's probably not going to happen at Dirty Fest, but, you know, I might take a look with them, see how that goes.
We won't tell.
She'll be there.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, well, that's super cool. I appreciate, I love hearing the stories of, you know, the inspiration of bikes and being able to get on your bike here in your story of being determined enough to push through. And I just appreciate your openness and willingness to share. Cause it's really cool.
Oh, I'm not a problem. And I got all kinds of stories. You want to hear some stories? I can tell you a real quick one. That's kind of funny. When I toured in 80, 81, 82, I was back east a lot, you know, all the different states at the Nationals. And of course, you know, Gary Turner was at all those. And, you know, I saw Gary at every one of those races. I've probably known Gary since 78, 79 when I was introduced to him and saw him all through the races through the 80s and 90s. And, you know, he never talked to me. He just walked past me, wouldn't say hello, nothing. And, you know, 7 years ago when I was reconnected with Craig, his son, I was over at the shop one day and Gary walked in and said, oh, hey, Mark, how you doing? I kind of looked at him and said, good, Gary, how you been? He shook my hand and then he talked and he didn't stop talking for about 45 minutes. And I said, Gary, how long have I known you? And he goes, oh, I don't know, since 77, 78, somewhere around there. And I go, you realize this is the most you've ever talked to me? He goes, oh, I hated you back then. You beat my riders. I hated you. That's good to know, you know, and we still chuckle about that, you know. That's kind of one of my favorite stories, you know. Like Gary's he's another guy who's still around and doing the thing, you know. He actually just won a funny car race, one of his
really
races at Bakersfield, 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that. Won.
Yeah, it blasted all over Facebook.
That's pretty cool. I've never met Gary. I met Craig last year at Dirty Fest, but I haven't had an opportunity to talk to Gary yet. So,
oh, he'll talk your ear off. Go up and say hello, and boy, be prepared.
Perfect. Well, I mean, I love stories. I love hearing the stories. It makes me feel like I, you know, connected in those moments and being able to, even though I'm a few years removed from that old school racing. I love hearing those stories and getting to talk to those guys, because I just being able to hear them reminisce. And BMX, although certain elements and aspects have changed, there are I would call them like timeless truths within the sport. And so there are things that those guys will talk about, stories that you'll talk about and share. And even though I'm, 20, 30 years removed from that particular situation, I still feel like, oh, like I can imagine being there. I can imagine experiencing that the way that they did, which is really cool.
Yeah, I used to love to get to the track first thing in the morning before anybody and ride it. Just, the morning dew, the sun coming up, the wetness of the track, and, just the sound of nothing before it all goes crazy. That was my thing. I loved getting there early and leaving late, and, always having an opportunity to ride. So, That's tracks cool. Back then, they are different than they are today. And BMX racing is way different, different.
Yeah. Yeah. There are some things about it that have changed, and I definitely enjoy the old school tracks. One of the things that I told Todd Huffman when I had a conversation with him was that I had talked to Jason Morris. I had seen him at the Grand Nationals this last year and ran into him, and I'm like, Hey, how's it going? And we were both out of breath because we had just come off a practice lap. And he goes, I'd be smiling a whole lot more if I was on an old school downhill track right now.
Right?
and I said, oh, 100%. That's exactly how I feel too. And so although, there are aspects of the new school stuff that is fun, and I just enjoy being able to race, there's nothing quite like the joy that comes from those old school downhill tracks. And it's a good time.
Yeah, I actually reconnected with one of my old friends from the 80s, Robert Taylor, and talked him into Frogtown a month before it happened. And he put his S&S together and raced it, and just, wow, blew everybody away by, 7-8 bike lengths every race in the main event, and picked up a sponsor from Race Incorporated and went back out there. Now he's racing expert class and racing cruiser class for Race Incorporated. And watching him go from old school to new school in such a short period of time is just amazing. It's just amazing to watch. Some of the guys I used to race back in the old day, Robert Raimondi, he's still killing it out there. I watch Tracer Finn go out every now and then. I watch, oh my God, Pete's back out there. All these guys from back in the 80s are back out there. And it's Charlie Williams. I love talking with Charlie Williams. We have a blast. We sit down and chat it every time we see each other at every race. And he's killing it, just killing it. So, yeah,
he's a fun racer to watch. I've gotten to spend quite a bit of time, become good friends with Robert Taylor, Robert Raimondi. Just watching him ride, that's super fun. It is really cool, and seeing and hearing those stories, and being able to be around those guys is just, it's encouraging, it's fun, entertaining, all that stuff.
Yeah, I posted some pictures of my storage unit today and some trophies that had, the dates on the bottom. My mom used to always put the dates and what race it was and, all that stuff. And second place at this track, blah, blah, blah. And he had posted, hey, I must have beat you that race. I was like, yes, you probably did. Robert Taylor, he's pretty funny. But he's blown me away watching him. Watching these guys go from old school to new school is kind of neat to see, to see the transformation of what it used to be like, and watching them do it now. I always ask myself, wow, could I do that? I went to the National last year at, what was it, City of Industry. And when I walked up to that track and looked at those jumps, I was staring at them going, oh my God, these things are huge compared to what we used to jump back in the day, I asked Robert, I said, how are these? He goes, oh, man, they're crazy, but they're fun. And I'm like, wow, I envy you, man.
Yeah.
Crazy, but fun.
Yeah, it is very different when you see the old school tracks with and pictures of those races where you'll have, you know, a jump that's what the size of a hay bale. And you go off that, there's no landing. It's just a flat and then some flat corners or like a very small bank to it. It's not a whole lot. And I mean, now and they're nearly vertical and it's very different.
Yeah, I looked at some pictures. If you go to USA BMX Pictures, it's like a rabbit hole. I don't know if you've ever been there. And they have all the nationals with all the pictures, and you get sucked into it for hours. But I looked at some pictures of Texas, and there was these moguls, all different places misplaced in one section of the track. And I think they used to call it like the moon section or something. And trying to get through that, you try to hit the first one, jump over them, you'd never make it. Just going through it is completely different than what tracks are today. There are rocks and dirt clods everywhere, you know.
It sounds like a more intense version of that second to last straight at Dirty Fest last year. Would it be kind of similar to that?
No. I know what you're talking about. No, these were like anthills, mounds, like okay. Misplaced everywhere, you know, one section of the track. So if you try to squeeze over here, you're still going to hit them no matter where you go. And okay. They're, you know, good sized moguls, you know, you're trying to navigate through. It was kind of fun. And I cool. Actually have a picture. I'm coming through it, and then you see this bike behind me way up here, and it's Daryl Young jumping them all. It's kind of classic. I'm like all squatted down, and Daryl Young is like way up above, just jumping them like it was nothing, you know.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh man, and Mark, I appreciate it. I love the stories. I love hearing that stuff. And again, I'm so grateful for you taking the time out of your day and being willing to share some stories and talk about BMX with me.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate it too. I could talk BMX for hours. I mean, talking to Mike today, he's going to barbecue for all of us next Friday night, and we're going to invade his house. Five of us are going to go invade his house. You know, Joey Madden, myself, Barry Nelson, Dino Bartoli, and Billy Zerzow, we're just going to go pile into his house, eat his food, destroy his bathroom, and then do the show and leave. Like the old days, you know? And Mike was saying today, hey, I can't wait to hear the stories. And I said, right. We all got some good stories. So, yeah.
That's pretty cool. That'll be a good time.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah, I'm excited.
Right on. Well, I'm excited to hear how that goes. And, you know, right around the time that this episode comes out, we'll actually be able to follow up and already see how the show went. Yeah. So that'll be a fun connection point. And
I can't wait to see you out there. That'll be good to see you out there with your kids. That's awesome.
Absolutely. You too. It'll be fun. We'll be able to get some laps in and go look at some pretty bikes as well.
Right. Yeah, the best part of it. Yeah, come over. Make sure you come over and see me, okay?
Will do. Yeah, we'll all go right. Over there. And again, thank you so much, Mark. Thanks for your time and thanks for the stories. Thank you. And thank you for your openness and willingness to share.
Yeah, not a problem. I'm an open book. You can ask
right
me anything
on. Right on. Well, I appreciate it. Have an incredible evening and look forward to chatting in the near future.
Yeah, so do I. Thank you. Thank you, Jay.
Cool. Take care, Mark.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us in today's episode. It is because of people like you and our sponsors who make this whole thing possible because they have a desire to see the sport grow. If you would like to get involved in the mission of BMX Breakthrough, you can start by going to your local track, find a way to volunteer, help out, and serve there. Or you can go to our website, bmxbreakthrough.com, in order to donate, find out about sponsorship, or learn more.